for today. As we all know that this is committee week, some members are still held up in their constituencies, have forwarded their apologies, but we will continue. We're actually supposed, we are dealing with the IEC strategic plan and the performance, performance something. You know, every time we have a new minister, the structure changes. This is how you must do things now. This is how we must do things, and we get lost along the way. I hope CEO or chair will fall in line with what you're going to be presenting today. I'm not sure whether it is necessary today for us to introduce ourselves, but the face is so familiar. I know Mr. Norman, I know the only gentleman that I miss is,
Sai
Mamabolo. And the IT gentleman?
Stephen.
Okay. I'm not sure if members would like to introduce themselves so that you are familiar with the faces. My name is Maggie Maunye. Next to me here is Mr. Matonzi, who is our committee secretary. And on my right is Mr. Adam Samuel. Our member there is Mepel Peterson Madonna. And next to her is Mem Koha Sibone, followed by Ntate Mani Dipita, followed by Ntate Andre Gam. And Ntate Mole Hakim Fana Wenkosi, Ntate McIntosh, Chairperson Kiruna Bao. We've introduced ourselves. I'm sure we're not like this before starting, because I'm sure most people are not aware that you are the deputy chair, because I did receive an apology from chairperson who's away on human rights issues, so she won't be with us today. And the leader who's leading the delegation is our deputy chair, that is Terry Selang.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. The apologies of the Chairperson of the Commission have already been presented. She is in Gambia on human rights mission. Commissioner Salzert was supposed to join us, but unfortunately due to the commitments around here, as you may be aware that she's an academic at UCT, she's not able to join us. Commissioner Finger also sends his apologies. He's just come back from Madagascar, and he was therefore not able to join us. Another commissioner is Judge Makanya, who also is busy with court matters, and that's why he's not able to join us. And I'm going to start by introducing the team from my near left here. Mr. Musutu Moebja, who is our brand new Chief Electoral Officer. And then next to him is Stephen Langtry, who is the manager in the CEO's office, but also dealing with risk issues within the organization. And next to him is Sai Mamabolo, or Simon Mamabolo, who is also a brand new Deputy Chief Electoral Officer. You see, within the organization, we've got a very wonderful way of dealing with issues of succession. Mr. Mwete was our Deputy Chief Electoral Officer, and she took over when our current chairperson left to become the chairperson. And when he left, Sama Mavolo, who was the Provincial Electoral Officer in Gauteng, then came over and occupied the position that was occupied by Mr. Moeb. So we circulated money in the family. And then next to Simon Mamabolo is Mr. Norman Duplessis, who is also one of our deputy chief electoral officers, and I think he's well known within this structure. He's been with the organization for a long, long time. In fact, most of us, when we joined the organization, we learned so much from him about running the election. When he asked me during the interview when I was the provincial electoral officer about what I know about the elections, I said to him, the only thing that I know about the election is that I voted in 1994. But I assume it was the right answer because eventually I was employed. So he is with us here. That's the introduction, Chairperson.
Thank you, Deputy Chair. I am sure we can hand over to you for your presentation.
Thank you once again, Chairperson and honorable members. Last time when we were here, we indicated to the committee that we were going through a particular process. That process was that of having to define the new vision and the new direction of the organization. Now, today, we have reached a point where that vision has been entrenched and ingrained within the operations of the organization. So the strategic plan that we're going to be presenting has taken into consideration all those new ideas that we present. But I just want to say in brief that the strategic plan is basically ingrained in about five key strategic goals. And Mr. Moetia, who is our chief electoral officer, is going to talk a little bit about those. But for the purpose of our discussion for now, I will just mention. The first one is that of achieving preeminence in the area of managing elections and referendum. The second one, strengthening electoral democracy. The third, strengthening cooperative relationship with political parties. The fourth, strengthening institutional excellence and professionalism at all levels of the organization. And the last one, dealing with strengthening institutional governance. You may be aware that quite a number of structures, particularly within Chapter 9 institutions, are trying to define a way of operating within a very complex legislative framework. And we lead in that particular process through this area of trying to strengthen institutional governance. But I must also indicate that taking the first and the second strategic goals, we have decided as well that we're going to be playing a much more prominent role, particularly at an international level. And just by way of digression, I would like to inform members here that we currently, and I'm saying this thing because the last time when we were here again, members have always said that they would like to get to know more about what we're actually doing at an international level. So I'm just going to be mentioning some of those aspects that we're involved in at an international level. And then the CEO will then deal with key strategic areas, particularly at an operational level. One of the things that is important for you to note, honorable members, is that we currently the president of SADC ECF, which is the Electoral Commission's Forum of Southern African Countries. We also serve in the task team or the working group of Commonwealth Electoral Network. We also part of AWEP, which is Association of World Election Management Bodies. We've been part of the task team establishing this structure, and then in October we will be launching this forum. And I think I need to indicate, or I indicated earlier on again, that one of the responsibilities is obviously to help with the elections in the African continent or in the region. And as part of that particular process, Mr. Sai Mamabolo, who is here, has just come together with Commissioner Finder and other people from the organization from Madagascar, where they have gone to assess the needs of the Madagascar in carrying out the election. So there is a strong possibility that we'll be playing a much more prominent role in the electoral process in Madagascar. And the chairperson, Mr. McIntosh, and yourself have already referred to the workshop that we have, which is also that, which is also trying to demonstrate that aspect of achieving preeminence in the area of managing elections that we had a workshop recently on electronic voting, that the majority of you attended, and we really want to express our gratitude that all of you were part of the debate and discussion. So next time when we're having discussions around that, you will be familiar with the debate, and it is not going to be something completely new. And even I'm sure the language you will be able to understand in view of the fact that we are part of that particular process. We are also having tomorrow an internal workshop this time, which is going to be dealing with innovation and social media. We're going to try to see to what extent we can actually begin to push an envelope to try to capture particularly the youth in our country. So there are lots and lots of things and innovations within the organizations that we're busy with, where we are trying to introduce new things in order for us to be able to capture as many people as possible in our processes. And as soon as we are done with those kind of processes, we will also communicate with you and indicate to you in terms of the thrust of our approach, what are the key issues that we're going to be focusing on, and we'll be familiar with some of those things when we talk about them. Now, without wasting too much time, I'm going to request the Chief Electoral Officer, Mr. Mwepia, to take you through our strategic plan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon to you and all the members. I think the plan is going to be on the screens. We issued the plan, we distributed the plan last week. I'm going to try and be brief in some areas because I imagine that there will be areas where we will need to spend a lot of time. We start off with the vision and the mission of the Commission. When we were here last this time, we had a different vision and mission. We now have a very simple vision, and that is to be a preeminent leader in electoral democracy. This means that if people are talking about elections, they will think of us. But it's something that we have to work at. We have to work in such a way that, you know, everywhere people look at elections and think, the IEC, whether they be school governing body elections, whether they be traditional council elections, whether they be, you know, legislative elections and so on and so forth. That really is the issue. The mission is that the Electoral Commission is an independent constitutional body which manages free and fair elections of legislative bodies and institutions through the participation of citizens, political parties, and civil society in deepening electoral democracy. We have looked at this much wider and said that even for communities, you know, that are electing representatives or are looking at representatives that are going to, you know, to take seats from an elective process, we would be willing to help. In terms of our values remain those of impartiality, integrity, accountability, transparency, participation, responsiveness, and respect. We'll do this both with our stakeholders, but with one another inside the organization as well. When we look at the legislative and other mandates, this is a part that through you, Chairperson, if all is well, nothing has changed. This is, you know, we have not made any changes in law, and the mandate really stays the same. And with your permission, Chairperson, I will skip to the next slide, which is slide 8, page 8 of the slide. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to deal with in the process. Perhaps, Chairperson, I could stop here and say Commissioner Taliaf has joined us. Thank you very much. In terms of the strategy,
actually, I wanted to welcome you.
Oh, thank you. Let me give you the opportunity.
Welcome you, Commissioner, to the meeting of Home Affairs, and we are happy that you are here. Since you've been appointed to come and work with us, we are happy to have you, and we hope we will continue polishing, you know, the election of our work, of our country, and ensure that there is free and fair election. Thank you for being here. And just before you continue, and the same way, I forgot to introduce Kaya. Kaya Zweni is from the Speaker's Office. And then right at the back there is Luyanda France, who is our minister's liaison officer. And we have two women ask your surname from
William. William.
You are all welcome.
Thank you.
Over to the comments.
Thank you, Chairperson. We shall proceed with our strategic plan on slide number 8. This is, you know, the process that we have followed. We drafted this new plan and the annual performance plans in terms of the framework for strategic plans and annual performance plans as developed by the National Treasury. These plans were developed after a consultative process within the organization, an inclusive process which culminated in us adopting the plans and getting the Commission to sign them off. These plans, the strategic plan covers a period of 5 years, and the annual performance plans cover a period of 3 years. They include strategic goals, measurable objectives, performance indicators, and targets of the Commission's programs, which I will deal with shortly. They also include budgets in respect of the strategic goals for the term covered by the annual performance plan. They will form a basis of our annual report that we table with you every year. We have set in place procedures for reporting quarterly on the attainment of these objectives, and we report regularly to the Commission for that purpose. The next slide deals with the strategic goals, and there are 5 of them. Commissioner Tulani has introduced them. The first one is achieving preeminence in the area of managing elections and referenda. Really and truly, this means that you know, we will always seek to be at the cutting edge of issues, to research them, to look at them, and to provide thought leadership in those areas. The second one is strengthening electoral democracy. We will do the work we are mandated to do as we seek to strengthen electoral democracy in our nation. The third one is strengthening a cooperative relationship with political parties. We do have party liaison committees for represented parties, but we are also looking at so often meeting with the parties that are also not represented. We have at the moment about 224 registered parties, and many of those, as you know, are not represented, and those are the ones when we get to elections that, you know, there are so many gaps we have to deal with, and we are looking at a way of at least, you know, getting them to know what is required of them. The fourth one is strengthening institutional excellence and professionalism at all levels of the organization. We have heard in this committee that, you know, there are no concerns, perhaps at provincial level, perhaps at national level, but lower down sometimes there are concerns. We are dealing with that subject head on, and a lot of work has already been done. We continue to do work. We're strengthening our organization at local level, training colleagues, because elections happen at that level. The last one is strengthening institutional governance, to have an environment that will be conducive for the work that we do. If we look at strategic goal number 1, dealing with achieving preeminence in the area of managing elections and referenda, there are a number of things that we are seeking to do. The first one is to ensure accessibility and suitability of voting facilities and processes by establishing and applying infrastructure to meet operational demands for each electoral event. We have just completed a process where we were revising our our voting stations, our voting districts, in line with human settlement patterns. That's one of the things that we will do in that area. Second one is ensuring efficient electoral processes by defining, specifying, and procuring electoral materials and equipment for all electoral events. In this area, we continue to run by elections between major general elections, and they continue to proceed well, because we have to always anticipate the needs of our communities, our political parties, and our electorate. The third one is increased voter participation in elections. This is a difficult area. We often say, you know, political parties and us have a role that we have to play to, you know, to increase voter participation. We, of course, have to inform, we have to educate, and we have to, you know, to provide the service. But, you know, we also rely on parties to be there, to offer an alternative for, you know, this way, that way, or the other way for voters, and so that voters get interested in coming to voting. The fourth one is maximize electoral justice for all stakeholders in the electoral process. In this area, we will, you know, every one of our elections, we want to have the results of those elections declared in a way that no one is contesting them, but also, you know, to hold them in the period within which they must be held, and in a manner that we have been mandated to hold them. The fifth one is enhance credibility of the voters' role. We have to ensure that the voters' role remains credible. It's always up to date, and from time to time there are challenges, and we must anticipate and deal with them timely. The sixth one is improve compliance with legal prescripts. We continue to look at areas where in law we can define things, and that's an area, amongst others, where we have submitted legislative amendments in this respect. The last one in this instance is continuously improve the legislative framework, and I've just touched on it a little bit. If we look at our annual performance plan and the indicators in terms of the strategic objective, the first one is the number of contracted voting stations of on main registration weekends and election days. And we are saying we will report on this biannually, and the target will be 22,000 voting stations. We have in the past had, we were on 20,000. 895. We are increasing access, and you will see this number tells you that, in fact, we have increased those. We are cutting distances, but we are also providing facilities to new communities. This figure will clearly be reported in the third and the fourth quarter, because we are going through a process of revising this process this year. On the next page, the second one is number of votes of schools used as voting stations for full-scale elections must at least be 60% as a percentage of the total number of voting stations on main registration day and weekend. This is a matter that we have been dealing with the Ministry of Education. We are very pleased to say that very recently, in fact last week, we have met with the minister, we have shared the number of schools, and the minister is actually saying, unlike in the past, it is actually a good thing that we are using more and more schools, because in those facilities, elections are managed well. And you can see there we are targeting 14,520 of the facilities to the schools. This is out of 22,000. And again, in this instance, we are reporting the third and fourth quarter, because we are busy with that process as we speak. The number of warehouses, local offices and facilities, and full-time distribution services for our services. We are saying that the number of warehouses will be 10, one in every province, one in every province, which is 9, plus one national warehouse. We will have at least 234 local offices, one in every municipality, other than a district municipality. So there are 234 of those, and a number of service providers will have one. So that 10, 234, and 1, 10 warehouses, 234 local offices of the IEC, and 1 distribution service provider. We must always have those, at all times, and that's why you have that number throughout. Every quarter we will report against that number. We move to performance indicators with respect to the second sub-strategic objective, and as I should have perhaps pointed out, Chairperson, the second sub-strategic objective here is ensure efficient electoral processes by defining, specifying, and procuring electoral materials and equipment for all electoral events. And the first one there is the number of registered voters that we will look at. We currently have 22 million registered voters. We are hoping that we will by the fourth quarter have 24,175,457 at least. You will know that the number is fairly down. We have looked at Stats South Africa's census outcomes. There is a gap that we need to close, and we are looking at increasing this number from the gap that we have identified. You will note that in the third quarter that number will increase by somewhat a significant number. We shall have had a registration weekend, hopefully, and then in the fourth quarter it will be even higher. The second one there is the frequency per annum that the voters roll is checked against the National Population Register. Every month we will do that at least once so that we keep our voters roll up to date. Sometimes we do it more than once, but we will do it at least once a month. That's why we have 12 and 3 every quarter. So every month we will be checking the voters roll against the Population Register. I then move to the next one, which is the next page, which is improving it's ensuring efficient electoral processes by defining, specifying, procuring electoral material. We've just dealt with it, increasing voter participation in an election. In that respect, we'll look at the percentage of elections for which voters roll is certified in accordance with electoral timetable. You would recall, members, that we, for every by-election, have an election timetable. And for every one of those by-elections, we have to certify the voters roll. And that is really the check. Every one of them we must do. And that, therefore, there is no room for failure there. It's 100% all the way. The number of calendar days in which elections are conducted from the date of the vacancy, we are required to run elections within 90 days of the vacancy being declared, and that's what we will do. We will seek not to be ever outside of that time frame. The number of calendar days in which to replace PR seats, they are proportional representative councillors that are in municipalities. We are required in law to fill their vacancies within 35 days, not 90 days. Those, once they leave their vacancies, we must fill them in 35 days. We have a maximum of 35 days. On average, this number is really a dozen days or less. We fill them as soon as it's possible, and when every document has been submitted to us in that respect. The number of calendar days in which election results are announced by the Electoral Commission, the law requires us to declare the results within 7 days. But as you know, for by-elections, the same day. For general elections, it's always been 3 days. And that's what we will seek to do. On the next page, we are dealing with the performance indicators for the legislative reviews, and there you see the number of legislative reviews will be annually. In 2013-2014 year, the target in this year really is not much, except that what we started last year will only be completed in this period, and so we will update that and indicate that finally the legislative amendments will be put into law in this financial year. Number of relevant bills, submissions to Parliament per annum, it'll be one, and it is that one, in fact, that where we are indicating it'll be completed in this year. The number of regulations published in the Government Gazette, it'll be one, and it will relate to the legislative amendments, as I've mentioned. In terms of the second strategic objective, that of strengthening electoral democracy, there are seven sub-objectives there. First one, encouraging citizen participation by providing continuous education, providing strategic and thought leadership, broadening our research agenda and issuing publications, increasing visibility through proactive consultation, effective communication and presence, facilitating platforms for political dialogue, cultivating an environment for free and fair elections, and constantly engaging the media. This really deals with our stakeholders, that we must be there to educate, to inform, to to clarify and to actually engage with them on a regular basis. And how do we do that? We will do that by, you know, measuring the number of civic and democracy education events per annum. We have given a definition of an event, and this is one area where you will see we have changed if you compare to the, you know, to our previous definition. We are looking at engagement relating to groupings of a minimum number of persons, and we are looking at the number of those kinds of engagements being 8,063 in this year, in this period. It really is dealing with groupings, and clearly they will start off at a lower base, they will increase, and towards the end they'll taper off because we will be dealing with a number of electoral related events then. We move on to the next page. The number of thought leadership initiatives per annum, we are thinking this will be 20. And there will be a number of these issues. There will either be, you know, seminars like we had on e-voting. It's that kind of thing where we want to share with our stakeholders and engage with them. But there will also be ideas where we, you know, we publish something that we have researched for engagement with our stakeholders. Or it will be opinion pieces that we write on election, you know, election management. All of those things put together, we are hoping that we will do 20 in this year. When we look at the number of research projects that we will conduct per annum, we are looking at three in this period, one in the third quarter and two in the fourth quarter. And these are going to be things that we will share in a majority of instances with the public. There will, of course, be those that we do to help us understand how we need to prepare for elections, which will be for internal use as well. We will also look at knowledge management, and you know, we have divided this into phases. Phase one of knowledge management is looking at the systems, and that we will do in this year. System implementation we will look at in the fourth quarter of this year. We're also looking at the number of targeted media interactions per annum. We will look at this, you know, in terms of media releases, in terms of media analysis reports, which we, you know, we will target per annum and therefore translate those into quarterly targets. We are looking at 30 media releases in this year and 100 media interviews, you know, across the country. These are minimum numbers, clearly, and, you know, at times we exceed this, but this is what we are looking at minimum, and we think it's more realistic. We will have 12 media analysis reports. Of course, the media analysis reports come one a month, and we, you know, we have a service that we use, which is a reliable service. And we look at it every month, and if there are issues that we need to address, we address it from that point of view. When one looks at the number of targeted communications, communication platforms per annum, we are looking at 14 of these platforms. We are looking at billboards, at wall murals, at train station boards, at taxi and rent TV, posters, flyers, television, radio, print, digital, online, Facebook, Twitter, mobile, public call centers. You know, somebody said to me the other day, we are only a million tweets away from an election. I want to think that we are a lot more million tweets away, because these tweets are coming in thick and fast. But there might also be another medium, who knows, you know, at the rate at which social media is growing, we might be having other platforms that we would need to deal with. We keep looking at those alternatives. In terms of the number of strategic partners that we are looking to work with per annum, and strategic partners really range from traditional leadership, you know, everyone, civil society organizations, churches, and so on and so forth, or religious bodies rather, and so on and so forth. We are looking at 150 of those. We have clearly defined them in our strategic plan. And every one of them, we are looking at a specific kind of engagement. In truth, we are really looking at all of society being informed about our electoral processes. When we look at the number of meetings with relevant stakeholders, we are looking at 46 in this year. But, you know, these are all of the stakeholders that I've spoken about that we will be engaging with, you know, and every one of them, organized business, organized labor, every one of them, schools, tertiary institutions, and so on and so forth. And we will look at those numbers in this year. Number of interactions with relevant stakeholders, it's the international stakeholders list that we're talking about. It's 13 of them. We receive a lot of stakeholders, but we also engage with a lot of stakeholders. The vice chairperson spoke about Madagascar. Next week we will be receiving people from Thailand, and those are the kind of engagements that we're talking about. Strategic goal three deals with strengthening a cooperative relationship with political parties. And this is really one stakeholder that we have specifically isolated. We will conduct a predetermined number of liaison sessions commensurate with the prevailing electoral phases, with political parties on national, on provincial, and municipal level. We have TLCs, we meet regularly, but we will also, you know, just meet with all of the registered parties so that, as I indicated earlier on, they are fully informed. We'll also annually ensure that funding in respect of political parties received from Parliament is distributed as defined in the relevant legislation. This is an aspect of the work that we continue to do and do well, and we do not have we seek to continue in that vein and even better. If we look at the number of liaison sessions with members of party liaison committees at national level, we are looking at 10 of those in this year minimum. At provincial level, 54 of those minimum. And at municipal level, 1,170. If one looks at that number, is that we would have 10 of those at national level, and in every one of those provincial offices, we will have, it's six of them in the provinces minimum. And we will have, 1,170 in municipalities. We're looking at an average of four minimum in those areas. And we have broken those down in terms of the quarters where we are looking at those numbers. Those numbers are evenly covered, Chairperson. I think towards later this year, we may even have regular meetings with them because, you know, at the height of election preparations, we tend to meet a lot with political parties. That number tends to increase depending on the number of by-elections as well. And so we think that those numbers are quite achievable and very realistic. Funding of political parties, we look at the number of disbursements that we make to parties per annum. We make, disbursements in tranches, one per quarter. And that's what we seek to do. We have already done one in this quarter. We are on the next page. When we look at the number of training sessions conducted with political parties at national level, we are looking at one at least and one at provincial level as well. There will be cascading methods used to deal with parties at a local level as well. Strategic goal number four, deals with strengthening institutional excellence and professionalism at all levels of the organization. And here I indicated that we are looking at really, striving for excellence at voting station level. We want our voters to have a pleasant experience of our elections. We are cutting queues, but we are also looking at a situation where our staff at the voting station is very knowledgeable about our electoral processes. We're looking at building institutional capacity, and every one of the persons that are working in an election, we would want them to be fully knowledgeable. We are looking at strengthening our presence and effectiveness at local level. There are a number of places where we are looking at structures or offices because of the distances and that situation, we are strengthening. We are also looking at, you know, people knowing where our offices are, looking at the issues of signage, accessibility, and all of those things put together. We're expanding human capital development. I will talk to this subject, but you will notice that, you know, we have particularly looked at our regional offices, not just municipal offices. You know, those offices that coordinate the work of municipal offices in a district. We thought that there was a great need for us to coordinate at that level, and we have gone a long way in strengthening that. Becoming people-centered, we you know, this is it's a service we provide to people, and therefore we have to look at how best we organize ourselves to deliver that service. And the last one is managing financial and human resources well. I'll deal with this. We have the next sub strategic objective. We have 2.7. I'm sorry, I missed that out. It should be 4.8. Strengthening risk management, maintaining sound industrial relations, and striving to comply with national climate change policies. Preserving the environment, as they say. Tough one. People say we consume a lot of paper, but we must and recycle and have policies that look at recycling. But doing other things well and building institutional memory is an important part of the work we do. Commissioner Villani spoke about succession. I think it's institutional, preserving institutional memory. In terms of performance indicators and targets in this respect, we are looking at number of electoral staff recruited per annum. You would know that on election day, we really recruit quite a large number of people. We are targeting 282,000 people that we will employ, 66,000 for registration, really, and 216 for an election. If we look at the number of electoral staff trained per annum, we are looking at 174. It will be the 66 that we deal with. There will be, of course, those that train, that you know, the persons that we are recruiting after them, who are going to be trained later, and that's a cascading way of training people. The number of area managers that we will recruit, it's again an area where we're strengthening, distribution of material at local level. We look at area managers that specifically look at how well, logistics and other things are handled in the local voting districts. And we are looking at 4,277 of those. In terms of the number of permanent staff positions filled per annum, we will increase that on that number slightly because we are going to capacitate regions better. But we are looking at 835 positions that we need to have filled annually in the Electoral Commission. Number of bursaries awarded, it's in terms of our staff development policy. We are looking at a number of 80 bursaries. For our own staff members that will be furthering their studies or seeking more qualifications. Number of staff who attend short courses or other exposure opportunities per annum, these are really the kind of opportunities we create in line with staff development plans and performance measures. And we are looking at 457. The number is broken down per quarter, and we will clearly be dealing with quite a lot of training in the fourth quarter as well. Performance indicators with respect to the number of fixed-term appointments or expansion staff, as we say, you will know that in the nature of our business, we have to bring capacity on board for a temporary period when we go to elections. We try and keep the numbers in a way that will facilitate efficiency, but at the time of an election, we do bring in temporary capacity or contract capacity for a period of time, fixed period of time, and that we are looking at 441 220 of those we'll do now, and I've indicated 221 we will do in the next quarter. Performance, percentage performance agreement in place for the current year. We are looking at, you know, annually all of the staff that we will employ for permanent positions for our staff, every one of them having a performance agreement. Percentage of performance assessments for the previous year completed by 30th of June in this year, we are looking at 100% of the staff that were in the employ of the Commission in the previous year having their performance reviewed in this quarter. Performance indicators with respect to our wellness programs, we are looking at 10 wellness programs that we will engage in this year. When I say engage in, it's not a once-off thing, but this is really creating awareness of our programs, one at the national office and one in every province, you know, a session like that. Of course, in the nature of the wellness program, it must run throughout, you know, the entire year, and that's really what we are hoping to do. We will annually meet statutory deadlines in respect of budgeting. We have done so, and we seek to do so. And these guidelines are very well publicized by the National Treasury. We will review them quarterly, and we will also at the end of the year, you know, review the whole year and look at how we load for the following financial period. We run monthly management accounts to manage our finances and to ensure that all is well. We can deal with any exceptions that we pick up. We can deal with issues that relate to annual performance, whether we are overspending, underspending, and take corrective measures. We'll do that monthly, and every quarter we will review. Here's a one that we often remind each other when we're back home, that this committee has said you must never come to us with a qualified audit opinion. And we are seeking to achieve an unqualified audit report each year. And you know, clearly, this will come in the second quarter, and we are hoping you know, we continue to, you know, to do well in this area of the work. We're also looking at developing and adopting consolidated processes for monitoring legal compliance by the end of the financial year, and implement and maintain the consolidated process during the remainder of the years covered by the plan. Legal compliance has become a very important function in our organization, as it is in other state organizations or departments for that matter. And it is an area of the work that in the past we have had challenges with, but we are specifically focusing on it. And members will be pleased to know that we are developing measures in this respect. We'll have a process approved in third quarter, and we should be running fully with that process. Not that we are not doing anything at the moment, we continue to do, but we think it's an area that we need to focus more on, and that's exactly what we are doing at the moment. We're also looking at the quarterly review and update of the organization's strategic and provincial risk register. I remember in the year that we got a qualification, there were quite a number of issues that the Auditor General raised as, you know, things that could have been avoided if we had managed, you know, had a proper risk management process. We have taken that very seriously. That process is underway. It is working very well for us, and the strategic, the Executive Risk Management Committee meets every quarter to look at our entire organizational risk, and we will continue to do so in the financial period. We will annually review the industrial relations policy framework in consultation with the relevant stakeholder. And really clearly in this respect, we are talking about the unions and ourselves. We have good working relationships with them, but we do not take them for granted. We engage with them. of course, in the nature of this, the work we do and the relations, some things will differ, but we are hoping that even where we differ, we find ways of managing our differences in the way that will take our mandate forward. We're also looking at developing and approving green policy and code awareness sessions. This is where we are talking about, how do we impact on the environment and how do we deal with these matters. Very difficult, you know, people say the ink that you use is not environmentally friendly. Those are the issues that we look at and how best to recycle, how best to, those are, you know, the challenges that we will deal with. We take them on, we accept them, and we hope we shall do well even in those areas. We, in terms of looking at our offices and, particularly at local level, the number of accommodation contracts and how their validity per annum, we'll review those quarterly, of course, once a quarter. A number of security contracts around those facilities, we'll also review them quarterly. Number of vehicles replaced per annum. We have a pool of vehicles, and in this period, we will replace 47 of those, and that's how we are dealing with the situation. We will dispose also a number of those vehicles in this financial period. When we look at our ICT infrastructure, we are saying it should be in place. As always, for the elections coming, there are a number of initiatives we are undertaking. Commissioner Tulan was indicating that we're also looking at issues of social media and so on and so forth. And we continue to review those. We will have a review. We've had a review. Currently, we've done some work in this area, particularly also looking at the risk management. We have tested our disaster recovery measures and have done well for a week. But we will continue to review that, and our next review will be on the 31st of December. When I say this, I'm not saying that between now and the 31st of December, there's nothing that we're going to do. We continue to have, but intermittently we will take a major step to look at the infrastructure. I must say that we are aware that with the kind of environment that we run, IT is very fundamental to us, and we test ourselves very, very regularly in that respect. If we look at the percentage, of the time that our network application systems are available, we are measuring ourselves to be at 97% availability. My colleagues are doing much better than this. It's not their word of mouth that says, we have attained 97%. There are systems that monitor the systems that we work at and they hold us accountable. On average, I think at the moment we are in the 98 and the 99%. But we will continue to seek improvements, and it is important to maintain an uptime that is very good. The final one is strengthening institutional governance. This is an area where we will look at refining institutional governance arrangements in the Commission. The Commission has Commission committees that it has established, which are oversight committees. But they also have responsibility that they have allocated to themselves as members of the Commission in terms of the work that we do in the provinces, and there are members of the Commission that are responsible for provinces, oversight of specific provinces. If we look at what it means in terms of our indicators, there are six governance committees of the Commission. Chaired by a member of the Commission. This committee will be six, and they will be maintained for the remainder of this year, those six committees. They will meet once a month, every month, all six of them, and therefore there will be 90 of those meetings taking place in this year. That is six meetings, once a committee every month three of those, four of those in every quarter will be will give us the number of the missions that we are saying of the 90 there. In terms of the number of annual reviews of the effectiveness of the governance committees, members of the committee of the commission have set themselves the task of reviewing the effectiveness of those committees once a year. So there will be, for every one of them, there will be a review of, you know, on the effectiveness of the committee, which is once a year. The number of meetings, of commission meetings, when the commission, you know, members of the commission meet in a commission meeting, those, they'll have 11. It's one every month. There's a month that, they won't meet, otherwise they'll have to meet on Christmas, Jefferson. It is December, but every other month they meet. Sometimes they meet more than once, and we have taken the minimum here of the 11 members. The first Christmas one, I represent you well. The number of quarterly reports reviewed per annum, I indicated that we have quarterly reviews on in terms of the annual performance plans that we have and our strategic plan, where we look at, in terms of the plan, this is where we're supposed to be. Every quarter we are looking at whether we are attaining that. That is shared with the Commission of the Executive Authority, and we take corrective action even as we go. So that is once every quarter. Number of annual reports, there will be one annual report which we will table with this committee in every year. That report will be based on our annual performance plan. Number of risk-based internal audit plans approved, we will have one internal audit risk internal audit plan, which is managed in the organization as we do every year, and that's the one that we would have. The Auditor General, of course, will come in addition to that internal plan that we have developed. Number of quarterly progress reports that we will have per annum. There will be one every quarter, and that's going to be four for the audit committee. I must also indicate that there are a number of areas where we have worked very well with the Auditor General, where of course they would place reliance on the work that we do. That means that the more we strengthen our internal audit processes, the more confidence that they have, and hopefully, the better it gets for us and for them in the work that we do. Chairperson, the last thing I am really doing, it's a slide on our budgets for the 3 years that we have for the annual performance plan. In the current financial year, the total is 1,479 million rand that we're going to get. 253 million of that is 254 almost. It's allocated against all of those objectives, against the objective of achieving preeminence in the area of managing elections and referendum. In terms of strengthening electoral democracy, we will spend 222 million. Strengthening cooperative relationship with political parties, 10 million. Strengthening institutional excellence and professionalism, almost 978 million. And strengthening institutional governance will be about 15 million. In the following year, 2014-2015 financial year, we will allocate 328 for the first of the strategic objective, 138 for the second one, 4 million for the third one, a billion for strengthening institutional excellence and professionalism at all levels of the organization. I think it is important to point that in that fourth one, that's really where the work happens, and you will see that the lion's share of the budget is actually used in that area. The last one, strengthening institutional governance, will be 18. million, more or less. The total budget for 2015-2016 will be 1.5 billion, 1.6 billion, just more or less. And again, we have given the breakdown in terms of the work that we're going to do. I thank you very much, Chairperson. I have taken quite a bit of time. There were quite a number of slides, 51 in total, and the plan, the detailed plan we have, you know, available. This was just really, you know, a presentation, an extract of the totality of the plan. I represent the team here. They will certainly deal with quite a number of questions if there are questions that arise. Commissioner Tulani, in case I said something that we must detract, please let's do so now. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you, CEO. I'm not sure if there are additions, maybe from your colleague. No. No, I noticed that he has covered everything in the presentation. Honorable members, that was the input by the CEO. I'm not sure if there are questions. I'm sure there are questions, actually, from the floor. And may I note your hand, please, Honorable McIntosh, followed by Honorable De Freitas in that one.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you very much to the CEO for the presentation.
In terms of the budget, the only thing that does concern me a bit is what I was brought up to understand in life, was there are things that you need to have, and there are things that are nice to have. And being having some Scottish background, we tend to go for what we need to have, rather than what is nice to have. But my concern is that we're running such a good business, well, it's not a business, but such a good operation, that it's possibly that we're spending more than we need to. I looked, for example, carefully at the conference we were at on electronic voting. Now, that, in my view, was a very expensive conference. There was accommodation offered to people. Everything was of the best. But on reflection, I felt it was a flagship conference for South Africa internationally. And I said to myself, that's a good thing for us, to have the head of the guy in India and the Filipino and the Brazilians. I mean, now they will say these South Africans are tops, which is what we want, not just in rugby. And so I think it's important that we do that. But I just think one must be careful that we don't go overboard on expenses. But then just two or three short questions. In Goal 2, you talk about research on, and I think that's very important, that there's academic research, there's analysis and so on. What I would like to know is, do you do it all in-house, or do you do it in-house and with some strategic partners, maybe at some of the universities and the statistical people and so on? All right, I accept the statistics are not complicated or with the kind of controversies around our census, but what I'm saying is I'd like to know what you do. And then you talk about media research. Could you perhaps just tell us who does that for you? Do you have an independent analyst on it? And I think it's very important that you do that. That's those two questions on research. Then in 4.3 of your goal 4.3, you talk about expansion staff of 441 per annum. What I'm not quite clear about, and maybe you've just explained it, does that mean that you're expanding with 441 per year, or is that to ensure that you don't lose staff, as it were? So if you could just unpack that one. And then the ICT, which really I don't think that's something you can waste money on. I mean, I don't think we can spend too much money on ICT, particularly on the risk and if the thing crashes and everything else. And we are becoming so dependent on it. But what I would like to ask, you are doing a complete review of your whole ICT structure, you said, by December 2014. Now, we've got a big election in 12 months' time, and, you know, all these guys like me start to get twitchy because we don't know where we might be in May 2014. What interests me would it not have been better to have had this done before we have a big national election? Or are you planning for the next election where you're going to have municipal and national together? But I'd just like to know why it's December 2014 and not, say, December 2030, for example. Maybe the time is not enough. Thank you.
I'm sure you are looking there.
Thank you, Chair. Just to start also talking to that's my number. Can I just request in the future presentations be done in different colour because I find it very difficult to read. Maybe I've just got bad eyesight. But it's not, I don't think it's the machine. I think it's the fact that it's all green and very difficult to. Okay. I just wanted to say that the Commission started off with a vision. And I must say, I suspect that the vision's been attained, actually. It's just a matter of improving on it. So congratulations on that. Then I have a few questions, and that is, the other request I'll ask next time is that each page get numbered, because it's kind of difficult to, when we're going through it, to try and refer to it. So if I can refer to, try and find it, your indicator 151, when you talk the number of registered voters, I just want to confirm, I presume these figures are based on the population roll, is that the case? And I see that you're sort of gradually increasing. Is there some kind of a formula that you're using with regards registering people? Have you sort of tracked and said each quarter we should be registering the following numbers, and is that based on anything? Was it just a wish list? Then your indicator 211, I'm trying to remember what the question was. A thing I've sensed, and I've also had the luxury of having sort of worked on the ground and with the IEC, and as my experience is that the IEC seems to focus on sort of big groups of people, which is what you put here, education events where people get together and you supply, they spend the day with you and you go into this intense course, which I've actually sat through and listened to, and you supply them lunch and all that jazz. Now, that's all very well and fine, but the reality is most people are not prepared to, well, not most, many people are not prepared to actually sit through an entire presentation and to listen. It's very interesting, very informative, very well presented. I mean, I'm not criticizing any of that. The reality is that especially in very urbanized provinces like Gauteng, people have very busy lives, and I suspect it cuts through all population groups in all areas. People have busy lives, they have lots happening in their lives. And I don't see that you're going to get the kind of numbers, I understand why, because you want to sort of do it on that, kind of numbers to sit through long presentations. I want to make the following suggestion. Is the Commissioner mentioned that you're going to be doing a workshop and you're going to be looking at new media, like social media and all that kind of thing. I want to suggest that, you know, in my interaction with voters, is a lot of people just need to know sort of some nuggets of information. They quite frankly aren't interested. You know, what the presiding officer does and what the party agents do and all that jazz. People like us are interested in that. But Joe Soap in the street actually aren't interested. They need to know things like this is, you know, 2014 is a national and provincial election. They need to know that it's two ballots, whatever the case is, and why they're two ballots. And I'm suggesting that perhaps using modern media, where people don't have to sit through long, laborious sessions, that through using modern technology and the traditional media, electronic media, radio, television, I'm including all that, is that nuggets of information get thrown to the voter that affects them. So I sense that well-meaning as the IEC wants to give all this information, but the voter actually the result is that they've got too much information, and there's this information overload. They just need to know the election day, they need to know that they must bring the ID book, they need to know that they don't have to re-register every time. So all these nuggets of information, I'm suggesting, not sending them all at the same time, but sort of bursting them here and there, so that people sort of start collecting this information in their head. I hope I'm making myself clear to you. But that's what I'm suggesting, because I've seen, just with interacting with voters, people are not prepared to sit. They might be in rural areas, I may be wrong, and of course that may be a bit different strategies. But as a Gautenga, I can tell you that people, and I'm also talking about in the Soweto community, which I know quite well as well, is people are happy to sit through it to a limited extent. So that's a suggestion I want to make. So that's sort of my comment on 211. And then 242, I'm trying to get to it so I can remember what it is. Oh, well, it's sort of a piggyback on what I was saying. So I'm glad that you're mentioning also the traditional media and also sort of, you know, billboard and all everything else, but also other social media, perhaps SMSing, sort of modern technology. And as you know, I'm sure your research has shown you that the majority of people, particularly young people, which are the voters who want to get to, are on their phone. This is what they have. This is their main communication media. They're not reading the newspaper. They occasionally listen to radio, they only listen to music, so all that kind of thing. So this is the media and the people are looking at. So I'm just sort of tagging on from what I was saying there. And then my last point, 411, actually, is, if I can remember what it is. It's also a comment from my experience, is that in general, all your IEC staff are very well trained, including your temporary ones who come in just for election time and so forth. But one thing that I do find lacking, and I don't have the answer, so I'm just throwing it out to you, is they're very well equipped with the sort of the mechanics, and they know exactly what needs to be done and so forth. What I do find is when it comes to political intimidation of all parties, I find that they're sort of, it's a very difficult thing. I mean, these are still human beings who put in a position, and although they've got the authority, when you've got five or six people from a particular political party and in some kind of verbal intimidation or sort of even subtle intimidation, it's a very difficult position. And I don't know how to answer this. I'm suggesting perhaps in your training manuals, how do we deal with this? We know it's illegal. I mean, we know all the legal stuff. But when you're faced there and now in the situation, there needs to be some kind of protocol these people are able to back off from without being hurt or intimidated or whatever in any way. That's just my suggestion. But otherwise, thank you for an excellent presentation and impressive as always. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you once more for the presentation IEC just gave to us now. I just want to know, has the IEC had to make provisions, arrangements for assistance in the upcoming Zimbabwean elections? If really significant assistance is needed there. Second one, how does the IEC propose to get 80% of registered voters participating in the election when prior that have shown levels around 60%? Lastly, what are civic and democracy educational events and where are they conducted? Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, as is the tradition, the commissioners deal with the easiest and then the administration will deal with the most difficult. but thank you very much for those comments and questions. I think quite a number of issues that were raised by honourable member debaters, there were more comments and recommendations, and then I think they are noted. There is a question that I'm going to request Commissioner further to deal with, which deals with the issues of research. But in relation to information that we've got on the voters' roll, Honourable Defenders, that information is checked against the population register. So the people that we've got in our voters' roll are people who really qualify to participate in the elections. Information has already been checked against information on the population register. And in relation to another issue that you had raised, indeed, we use in both traditional media and new media to try to reach out to as many people as possible. So, hence the workshop that I referred to earlier on of social media, which is basically going to be targeted largely the youngsters to try to make sure that they are part of this, because the majority of people who are not on voters roll belong to that category of people. So we're going to be focusing largely on that category of people. The issue of Zimbabwe that honourable member, Madam Peterson, raised, we have not been approached. As you may be aware, that we participate in the continent or anywhere in the world at the invitation of either the commission or governments of those countries. We don't impose ourselves as the Electoral Commission of South Africa. So once we are approached, if we are approached at all, we will see to what extent we can be able to help. We always assess the request on the basis of the capacity we've got within the organization. And if we are able to offer assistance, we will indicate what kind of assistance we offer. And as is always the tradition, we will come to you and indicate to you the kind of assistance that we're going to be giving in all this area, whether it is in Zimbabwe and or whether it is in Madagascar, as I suggested to you earlier on. But in relation to Zimbabwe, we have not, as Electoral Commission of South Africa, been approached as yet. And I think Commissioner Tiger can deal with the issue of the research, and then from there, all other questions, I think the administration is quite capable in dealing with.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner Silane. I must say I can see that the infrastructure has dramatically improved in committee rooms in Parliament since the time that I was here. Just on the question of research, I think it's important to also note that any constitutional institution that has a strategic mandate, such as the IEC, is constantly engaged with research of one form or another, particularly around the many strategic areas that are in our mandate. So we have longitudinal studies of long standing that we do in partnership with the Human Sciences Research Council. We are also increasingly interested as a commission to understand what is happening in the tertiary education sector. And here I very much wear two hats, both as an academic and as a commissioner, because there have been a number of initiatives at our university. Some of them we were intimately involved with, the creation of the Brigalia Bam Chair in Electoral Democracy at UNISA. We are not, as a commission, involved in the creation of the Fonseca Clubber Chair at UCT, but we certainly are taking a keen interest in the research output of that chair. But we're not only looking at the institutions that have been created at tertiary level, we're trying to develop a broader understanding of what's happening as well in the political studies environment to see what areas of research collaboration there could be. And where we have interacted with academics as well, they demonstrate quite a clear interest in understanding the impact and the role of the Born Freeze in the upcoming election. There seems to be quite a significant research appetite in that field. We've obviously also done a number of our own research initiatives, particularly looking at young South Africans and the impact that they will have in the next election. So we are constantly engaged in research, particularly of a more substantive policy nature, but also where there is longitudinal data that we're interested in, looking at attitudes to democracy, looking at awareness of the IEC as an institution, and those activities are ongoing.
I am very pleased that I have two colleagues. I'd like Sai to deal with the questions regarding the the voters' role, what is it based on? Are you some scientific members or are we scientific? And I'm sure you're going to tell members of scientific and how we can do it. There's also a question that deals with the sessions that we are dealing with in terms of, you know, the educating and so on and so forth. Please deal with that one. And also deal with the question of the question raised by Madonna Peterson regarding how do we intend 80%? Yeah, Norman, I'd like you to please help with the ICT review. Clearly, you know, we I think that the Macintosh will think that we are going to dismantle everything by 2014. That's not the case. Please clarify that. The issue of expansion staff, Norman, please also just deal with this. I also deal with the simple one. The simple one really is media monitoring. Who does that for us? We have media monitoring South Africa, the company. Every month, anything about the IEC and the work that we do, they collect from all media, and they send us a summary. We look at how the media has covered us. There are instances where they'll give us a very positive media coverage. There'll be areas where they give us an average media neutral media coverage, and there'll be places where they say the media has been critical of you. And we look at those things and go and deal with them. I must say to you that our media coverage is phenomenally very good. In fact, one of the outcomes of that process is that every month we have an advertising equivalent that the media organizations work on. And without paying a cent, we get on average coverage of about, let's say, between 12 and 20 million, you know, which we would, if we had to pay, that's what we would have had to do. So we are very newsworthy for quite a lot of media. Then I must say that we have taken note of spending and, you know, needs and wants. We manage a tight ship. I must say to you, we really, really try never to be, you know, in the wrong area in that respect, but we will continue to try. I also must say that with respect to the presentation and the color scheme, I wanted to say, and thank you very much, but we will also take note of the fact that you are saying for the future, you know, page numbering and all of those things. They exist, but we'll make them appear on the screen. You know, I realize that some slides we have not done that. And finally, I must say that we have prepared, you know, started working on our preparations for elections earnestly. The issues of political intimidation and so on and so forth are the issues we are, you know, also dealing with as we train staff, as we recruit them. Quite a number of issues, you know, some things of, you know, what's allowed in the area where you work, what's not allowed. We are trying to even simplify those things further. I trust my colleagues will close these things by just attending to the issues I pointed out. Thank you very much. Yes.
Thank you, Vice Chairperson and CEO. I'm going to be dealing with some of the questions that the CEO referred to me, the first of which is how did we come to the target on the number of registered voters? It is not a thumb fact, but it's based on the quantum registration between voter registration drives ahead of national and provincial elections. So it's taking into account historical account of how well we have done between elections of the same type, national, provincial. So, which is about often a 10% increase in the rate of registration between two major elections. The issue of how do we intend to get to 80% voter turnout. The voter turnout in the last national and provincial election in 2009 was 77.978%. So we do think that with the people that have since turned 18 who did not participate in the last election, and indeed the excitement that we expect the political parties to make around their election campaign, a 2% percentage point should not be too difficult for a democracy such as ourselves. I think where we have the 60% rate of turnout is in respect of municipal elections, but in terms of the national and provincial elections, the voter participation is always high, and we think that 80% is a plausible proposition. What are civic and education programs, and where do they happen? Those are educational programs that happen at the community level, be it in a school, be it in a community hall, be it co-hosting, etc. We deal with concepts such as democracy broadly, what does it mean, participatory democracy, elections, why do you need to register, and issues of public participation. These programs are intended really to cultivate the civic consciousness of the citizens and really create the activism that we need for active citizenship. So those are the types of educational programs we have. We are of the view that we need to define them more stringently, which is why we are introducing the fact that there's got to be a quantitative element to it. There's got to be a minimum of 20 people attending this program, so that we broaden the reach. If you allow me, CEO, Vice Chairperson, to digress a bit, I think we also are conscious of the fact that this way of doing things still has a role to play in the overall education of the public. But we also accept the fact that we would now need to embrace new media in a manner in which we communicate this education to the broad South African public, because it is clear that there's a significant proportion of young South Africans who would not go to an educational workshop, but who would rather receive the information on a mobile device. I think, Chair, I've dealt with the issues you've questioned me to handle.
Thank you, Chair. On the question of expansion staff, that is temporarily increasing the number of staff members at offices. We have currently 111 local offices where we only employ one person. And as electoral activities increase, obviously there need to be somebody in the office and somebody in the field. It's to deal with those kinds of situations. The ICT review, that has already been done in respect of the forthcoming election. You test your systems as they perform during the forthcoming election, and then a review prior to the municipal elections thereafter. On the question of training and the political intimidation, it's always been a very tricky subject. But having said that, the norms that we set these days, and have for the last election, but also now the forthcoming election, is that a person needs to be here at least in the 30s, needs to have at least 10, 12 years experience. I don't think it's the answer to everything, but I do think that if a person is too inexperienced, it probably becomes difficult to deal with people that keep questioning decisions and the processes, etc. I think that process may evolve over a period of time in perhaps something a little bit more satisfactory. On the question of cost of elections, can we just for interest actually that there are budgets between national elections to similar elections has always been below the inflation rate. The budget in 1994-1963, if we're talking about the 2011 budget, which is a similar thing where it's spread between two financial years, that was 2.8 billion, this is about 2.9. The reason for that is that we do not get budget on a historical basis where you've got a fixed figure and then an annual inflation adjustment. Because of the cyclical nature, it is pretty closely interrogated by Treasury. So if we're talking about the overall amounts, there's, in fact, I think as our efficiency, particularly in terms of ICT and logistics, have improved, and that has been great cost containers, really. That just as a general comment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. On a lighter note to Honourable De Freitas, the issue of intimidation, I thought we were going to be suggesting that we should actually teach our presiding officers on self-defense. But I was worried that if honorable members come then and come second to presiding office, it might not really be a good idea.
I might just say that you don't take your chances with defenders.
For the answers to the questions, Honorable McIntosh wants to follow up on some of the issues, I'm sure. But before he comes in, I think the issue of intimidation is a serious one. And last year we had a problem in one of in my constituency, actually, where we lost a young man through intimidation. And you know, it was so sad. We tried to take up the matter with the PLC. I don't know where it ended, but it's real serious. And I think our PLC structure needs to be strengthened to deal with such issues. And the issue of, I noticed that there were a number of disposed vehicles. Do we have a disposal policy? So how do we deal with such matters? Do we have that? There were issues that were raised by the Auditor General in our last year's annual report. Are we addressing those issues so that we don't see that those issues coming up again? Because that will actually lead us to a clean, unqualified report. So I would love to hear as to what is happening with the question of the issues that were raised by the Auditor General. Honorable McIntosh?
Madam Chair, thank you. I was just intrigued by two things and would want to comment. The one was the idea of using people who are a bit older. I think there is a political party which has a youth league where the cutoff age is 35. Maybe we should only employ people who are older than 35. No, but that's the piece done. That's a joke, and it's perhaps a weak one. But Madam Chair, I was very interested in Mr. Mamabolo's trying to get to 80%. And I don't know how many of you recall, at that presentation on electronic voting, somebody was discussing, I think it was Estonia, where they had a problem to get people, I don't know, to vote on time or early, because in Estonia, it's a party day when they have voting. And my experience on my farm is that when the voting comes, and we take, because we give people lifts to the thing, the people are in a very good mood. Look, you know, the Zulus have found an excuse for a party very quickly. But the point is, I don't know, it's a silly thing, but you know, maybe you get somebody to organize a prize for the best dressed voter or something. And I think you might be surprised how people would be interested in it. And how one would manage it or how one would handle it. I'm just thinking, if you're wanting to get up to 80%, maybe that kind of motivation might interest them. But But, you know, I just suddenly thought of Estonia and I thought of the people. And it is a great day to go and vote. And I think for South Africa, because our people were denied the vote for so long, we could perhaps make a little bit more of it. Maybe it's a flippant suggestion.
But maybe if you could just enlighten me with regard to, you know, the posters issue. We are going to have a by-election in, I'm sure, around 4 weeks. I'm sure it's Ward 115. So there are posters there. Now you'll find that, you know, in one poll we have about two parties. And the other party will put a poster on top of the other party's poster, which is not fair. So, yeah, it's not allowed. But now I want to know, where are these PLCs to check on such issues? Or must we go and report it to the party? Over to Terry and the CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. The suggestion coming from Honourable McIntosh, I assume what he was trying to say is that we must try to be more innovative in trying to capture as many people as possible. And then in dealing with our processes, we will definitely bear in mind all innovative ideas that we can be able to master. The issues raised by the Auditor General, what normally happens is that immediately after we have received our audit reports, we get the administration to develop a program of action to deal with all those issues that have actually been raised within the audit report. And constantly we check through the committees that we have within the organization whether in fact those issues are being addressed and progress in relation to addressing those issues. We had a meeting with the audit committee yesterday, and to a large extent those issues have actually been dealt with, and then we're satisfied that they are being addressed. Honourable members will, however, remember that there was one issue which was raised in the audit report, which we said is likely to remain with us for a long period. And perhaps Mr. Du Plessis will talk a little bit about that particular issue once again, just to remind members so that when you see that issue again, you should not actually think that it is because we have not actually been doing our work. It's because of the specificity of that particular issue that that issue is going to remain. You will deal with the issue of the posters again. I think the issue of the disposal policy, the CEO had already indicated that we indeed have a policy dealing with that.
Thank you, Vice Chairperson, and Maggie, thank you. The question, and we must speak, we'll answer it into the mic on the issue of disposals. Yes, we do have a disposal policy, and you know, we are disposing the vehicles in terms of that policy. The question of posters is a very difficult subject at times. You know, there's an element, a criminal element, but there's also an element where, you know, it's a question of space. We have, and it's not really just a matter for the PLC to deal with. We work very closely with the security establishments so that they deal with those elements as well. We do want to know about where these things happen so that we parties in the areas where these things are happening can work very closely together. I remember in the run-up to the last elections, in fact, there were a number of cases reported to the police, but the effective solution, of course, came from the fact that political parties agreed that this is not on, they need to work together to deal with it. But clearly, where the intent is criminal, we have to help the police to deal with that criminal matter, and that's what we do. You know, there are stories being told in the PLC, and parties say this, I guess on a light note, there was a party that said, we went to a poll and found that there was no space, but your party had two of those, and we decided to only use one of them.
to put our body.
So,
so this we try, and the truth of the matter is that it is in most instances really purely a criminal matter, and we are working very closely to provide police with capacity in terms of the law to be able to deal with it. My colleagues can add. Norman, you're going to deal with the Commissioner's Learner's issue on the financial statements.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think the income audit at this point in time contains no issues which are of great concern. It's always dangerous to say that none may come out in the final audit, but none that we are aware of at this particular point. I also want to say that if we have 244 officers, and to get you a clean audit, if you look at that variety, is an extremely difficult thing. That's point one. Point two, the cleaner you get, the narrower the road. If I can illustrate, we have one of the issues in the interim audit where we did not pay a person or a company within 30 days. We didn't do so because they didn't have a tax clearance. So it becomes a self-fulfilling, which one of the two do you comply with, and it's raised as an issue. That is what I mean if I say the road becomes narrower. I have little doubt that unless there are things which would hugely surprise all of us, we will get an unqualified audit. Clean audit, that is a, we're striving for it, we're doing our level best for it, but I would not give you assurances other than that we would do our level best. On the issue of irregular expenditure, when we entered into our current lease agreement, when we advertised the tender, did not stipulate that that tender would be judged in terms of the 90-10 principles as prescribed in law. We did do those, though, but the public advertisement didn't state that. And it is a requirement of Treasury that the advertisement should have stated that. And that per se makes that expenditure for the duration of the contract irregular. If you go to our audit report, it is so clearly defined, it was so stated. And it remains irregular. The unfortunate thing is that there is no distinction between different kinds of irregular. If I sometimes look at newspaper headlines and it says 500 million rand lost, it does not mean that the money was not well spent, that it was not properly accounted for. It means that somewhere along the line, or in some instances, let me also say that, that not all of the technical prescripts were followed. In general, the response of Treasury to this has been to prescribe and to tighten up rules. Now, that is one approach to the matter. But we are finding, especially with smaller contracts, smaller quotations, in particular, BEE companies that are saying your administrative process to provide you for a quotation is just too difficult for us to comply with. And where small companies are starting to fall off the line. To register as a vendor with us requires 14 pages of information as per the Treasury prescript. Now, somewhere along this line, you miss a question or there is a document that is missing, it becomes irregular. So I think there is perhaps a need, it's not an issue here, it's a Treasury issue, where one needs to distinguish between what is genuinely wasteful or not value for money and what is perhaps of a more technical nature, as in our particular instance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Andre?
Can we be comfortable with the IOC trying to get a clean order if Mr. Norman of the Sea tells us that he is afraid to get on the narrow road?
I'm afraid for you, Chairperson. There's a place on this road for 1 foot at the moment, not for 2 foot and a half.
But thank you very much, IOC, for all the presentation as well as the answers that were posed by members. We want to thank you. And do you have a question, Mem Paul would like to say something before we close.
Thank you, Chairperson. The IEC does not seem to have an objective related to international engagement as in previous years. And I wanted to know why is this, and where does the support that the IEC gives to countries on the African continent fall in its strategic human resource and budget planning? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought you start with the vice chairperson. Well, so talking there is one has gone. That one on number of interactions with relevant stakeholders 2.6.1, where I indicated that some of our colleagues have just returned from Madagascar, but we will also be hosting delegations from Thailand. Interestingly, Chairperson, I might just say, you know, my chairperson was saying it does not happen very often that people from Egypt will go and study systems on the continent. Very recently, we've had a very senior delegation of members of the Electoral Commission of Egypt coming to look at the work we do, and they were saying that, you know, they were persuaded to come, and they were very they found the work that we were doing very insightful. So that's what we are really doing, Nampo. And we know that, you know, we have set ourselves 18, but these things really are happening at a pace and level at which we really, you know, we are finding ourselves having to do them regularly. It's not a problem on its own. I think it's one way of entrenching democracy beyond our own borders. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO. I was saying we thank the IEC together with our commissioners who are here today for all the inputs and the questions that were answered. We thank you very much, Deputy Chair. And you must know that this is one entity we are proud of. It's a shining star of this committee, and I'm sure internationally as well as in the continent. So you keep up the good work and ensure that you are an example in the continent and world as well. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we've come to the end of our meeting, but we are having a meeting tomorrow, 9:30. I'm not sure where is the bench? E-529. Yeah, we're discussing two documents, the Home Affairs and our business standards. Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, IEC, the commissioner.